Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 428 of Pixels and Ink, the official podcast of CG Magazine, where we take a critical eye to gaming, comics, tech, and media. I'm your host today, Chris DeHoog, and I'm joined by Brendan Fry.
Hello there, Chris. It's been a while.
It has been a little while. And
it's good to be back.
Jordan Biardi, if you're with us.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
I mean, he's in excruciating pain from abs.
Yeah. In the last 5 seconds.
I died.
His abs are just too ripped.
He's been up in the gym just working on his fitness.
Y'all's just jealous of my mad fitness game.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And
it's starting to remind me of like Aqua Teen Hunger Force when Shake thinks he's all jacked, I think.
Yep.
I'm thinking of.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That's the one where his abs come to life and start getting into like bar brawls.
Can we just say that show could never have been made if it wasn't the right formula of people with just no rules and a network that just had fill time slots?
It was definitely a product of Adult Swim at the time.
Yeah.
I don't think it's
no longer like
any other time.
It's still kind of like that, but it's like, I'd say it's in its like modern era. Because you still get stuff shows. Like, well, because you still get stuff like the Eric Andre show. That's still like really crazy. But then some of the other stuff that they're running on there too, like PsyCops and stuff, is like really super weird. And Smiling Friends. And Smiling Friends like really evokes the kind of like Aqua Teen era.
Yeah.
But it's a little more, like it does have more modern sensibilities, I would say.
Aqua Teen or Smiling Friends?
Well, just no, Adult Swim in general, right? Because then they run stuff like My Friend Superman and stuff, and they have like anime slots and the Genndy Tartakovsky stuff. So it's like
I think it is more now just a product of what Warner Brothers is now, or Warner Brothers Discovery is now. And back in the day, it was literally, we have licenses for stuff. Let's make adult versions of the random things we have that no one cares about.
I never connected the dots that Warner Brothers owns Adult Swim now until
they
just
do.
Now.
They own, Turner Media.
That's real depressing. Yeah.
They own the Flintstones and Scooby-Doo and
all
everything.
Other great classic, still relevant franchises.
Yeah, everyone. Oh, yeah. The weird knockoff of the Honeymooners in prehistoric era. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's still relevant today
with the jokes being just straight up domestic abuse. Yeah. Those are great.
Yeah. It's
and then there was fantastic. That, I mean, there was that weird era where didn't they do like wasn't it like the Flintstones After Dark or something it was called? And it was like genuinely like mean spirited adult quote unquote comedy where like Fred and Wilma were having like domestic disputes and their relationship was on the rocks.
I mean that is very possible that exists, but I don't remember it. I do remember Ren and Stimpy's Adult House
Party. That's just garbage.
What was that on? That was on what channel?
It was on Spike. I think it was a Spike thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that one was just hot garbage.
It was not what I would describe as great.
No, nothing compared to the in-depth satire that was Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That was genius.
The first Aqua episode Teen of Hunger I ever Force. Saw was one where Shake had been sticking Meatwad's pets in the microwave.
Oh my god.
Burying them in the backyard.
They all come back to life.
Carl had a male enhancement device called the Ridiculous.
I mean, to be fair, that's a great name for a male enhancement device.
Oh, it was fantastic. But it was also extremely radioactive, and it reanimated all the microwaved pets.
I mean, so many questions.
It's real. I don't know. It really does manage to like be funny despite how like
bad
crass it is, because like I think an episode like Hand Banana wouldn't have worked in any other show, but somehow Aqua Teen like just makes it work.
Yeah, to be fair, I think a lot of what Aqua Teen does shouldn't work in itself, but somehow just the stupidness of everything, it just kind of does.
It just buys into itself so hard. Yeah.
Yeah, because it knew how to be like super irreverent too. Like there was a long, like what was it after like the fourth season? I think it like kept changing its name.
Oh yeah, yeah, there was that whole season.
You know, it was way into the season they started doing that. It might have been like the sixth.
It might have been the fifth. I know it was Aqua Unit Patrol Squad. There was Aqua Aqua TV show. There was Aqua something, you know, whatever. But the and is, then Aqua Teen Forever.
The intro changed. Nothing else about the show changed. Like literally nothing.
Just the name and the intro.
They just want to make TV Guy people sweat. Like, what's this show now?
So dumb.
It's so good. Goddamn.
Yeah. We shall never see it's like again. For better or worse.
What was the other one? Sequest. I enjoy Sequest or Moral Orals, the other ones I enjoyed, even though those are bad.
I never got into Sequest. I know a lot of people, because I've seen it on TikTok, a lot of people say Moral Oral was really good. Like, it was just one of those shows people didn't appreciate at the time.
It had really interesting elements. It went too far for most people.
Yeah.
Like almost everyone. Because you're like, oh, there's some, like it had
gets dark.
That was the claymation, right? That one.
It's the one that looks kind of like Davy and Goliath.
Okay. Yeah. I never actually watched that one, but it seemed, that tracks.
It goes into this weird dark territory. Like, oh, this isn't even funny anymore. This is just sad.
Yeah. It gets really like morose.
I mean, it's well done. It just isn't a show you watch to have fun anymore. It's a show you watch like, oh, it's still going. Cool. Yeah. Let's see how they get out of this weird divorce saga that they're on.
It's like a snuff film of an experience. Sounds like just as
it's weird. But yeah. Wow. We went off the deep end. There.
That was an intro. That was pulled open right there.
I'm down for it.
The suffering that Jordan's gym schedule has wrought upon us.
I'm down for talking about Adult Swim back in the day.
Old school Adult Swim.
There might be, actual stuff we should talk about, maybe. I don't know.
You mean besides niche pre-Archer adult animation?
I mean, they're doing the, I think they just released it, the Venture Bros movie.
Yeah, the Venture Bros movie just, I think, came out like 2 weeks ago, and the Metalocalypse movie comes out in about
The Metalocalypse movie.
And what I find amazing about that is the fact it took so long. Because like Brendan Small was saying, it's never going to be made. I can't do anything with the franchise. It's done. And then he's like, I guess it's back now. Yeah, it's touring. Good that
putting an end to that whole saga too, right? Because that was another one that kind of got canceled unceremoniously.
It did, and it ended out of this weird movie, and they're like, that didn't end. Okay.
Yeah, and that's another one of those shows where I think like a lot of people just like didn't appreciate it, like because it's like I've gone back and watched some episodes of Metalocalypse. Mm-hmm. It's like genuinely really funny.
It I find it's pure chaos at times, but it's some really good like banana stickers will never be old to me.
So they go to the grocery store, the foods libraries.
Because it's mixing like rich people don't understand society comedy with just pure like metal imagery, and it was so weird.
It's so good.
It's like heavy metal.
Like metal, like the drawings that a teenager drew in the side of his notebook came to life, and were just rich assholes that did not understand the real world.
Yeah, no.
So like rich assholes, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But they didn't understand the real world. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was good too, because every now and again it would just like it would throw you a curveball too. Like I remember the one scene where they're all talking about like how shitty their relationships with their dads are, and like how they hate like their dads, and then it just cuts to Nathan and he's like, not me, my dad's awesome. It's just like a montage of him having like really nice times with his dad. It's so funny.
So weird.
Oh, that was a great those are all great shows. Really consistent.
They were a lot. Adult Swim was. I mean, there was a lot of bad shows in Adult Swim. Let's be clear here.
There's some spaghetti being thrown at the walls. Yeah.
They're like, what if this is a thing? And it was like, no, that's not a thing.
That's the thing with that. Like most of those shows are just like a hair away from disaster, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, if they changed one bit of the formula, they wouldn't have worked.
I feel that
Danger Mouse,
Venge, yeah, that wasn't great.
Wasn't great. I always did like Squidbillies. It was again, it was pure chaos.
I never got into it.
It's because it's very like Aqua Teen in that way, where it's like it's very chaotic, but it's like it's just stupidity, and it just makes you laugh.
Yeah, I give you that.
I think I never got into Super Jail. I've heard most people say it's pretty good, or it's never got into that okay one. At least.
Never got into that one. I did like the infomercial set. They just basically look like public access television. Yeah, that was fun. There's a lot of dumb, but anything happened in the gaming world today or the last like month?
Well, yeah, the last time we were on, we were all talking about Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah,
it's been a while. Yeah, it feels like we've kind of hit most of the big games of the year already between that and Tears of the Kingdom, but there's quite a few big games left in 2023.
There's a lot of big games. I mean, I think as of this week, we finally got word that Call of Duty Modern Warfare Call of Duty this year will be Modern Warfare 3.
Mm-hmm. Surprise.
I mean, who thought that would come?
Yeah, that's something that's happening. I can't muster any excitement for that because that series has been dead to me for like 15 years.
I mean, we've done so many articles on Call of Duty over the years that I forgot how many games there are in the series. Like we've done like the best 10 best Call of Duty games. And I'm like, oh, there's like 20 of them now. It's been that long.
Yeah. Cause when was the first?
It was like 2003.
Cause like, I remember like the first Call of Duty on PlayStation 1, I think it was, or was that Medal of Honor? Either way.
You might be thinking of Medal of Honor.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It all kind of blends together. World War II games.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what been like 2007 was when the first one came out. That was like in this modern run.
Yeah, I think that's correct. It's been a while.
How do you keep going? Like even Assassin's Creed burned out after a while.
I mean, there's now like 3 coming this year, so who knows? But
well, yeah, Assassin's Creed took a break and now they're like, yeah, let's catch up for last time.
Every time you think.
I think this could be interesting. I think the fact they've taken this long just kind of even like say when it's coming out means they have a lot of confidence in the game. That being said, I still can't care about Call of Duty beyond the fact that say that's a major game and it's great for benchmarking. Beyond that, I'm just it used to be that every single new one entry came out, I'd play the single player and I'd try some multiplayer. I've missed so many. I'm like, I can't catch up now. It's too far. I don't have the 1,000 hours to play it. Right? I'm one of those people that if I've missed like a series, I say I have to go back and play all the ones up to this point. Hmm. And then it gets to the point of it's just daunting and I can't do it. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Like that's why I haven't played Assassin's Creed since Assassin's Creed 3.
That's my problem too.
But at least there's like some kind of overarching narrative through most of the games, at least behind the scenes. Whereas Call of Duty is just like, yeah, here you go. Here's a new campaign with a bunch of set pieces and go hit that multiplayer.
Well, that was like for a little while too, Call of Duty was really getting away from single player campaign. And that's kind of why it was like starting kind of like, I guess for a lot of people too, like people were sort of getting away from it because it was like, that was like the one reason, you know, if you weren't really big on the multiplayer, because you know, the multiplayer was kind of daunting. If you weren't like hyper competitive about it, you know, at least it had a really good single player campaigns. And it was like, they started just like a sort of abandoning that after what was like Infinity or whatever it was. Infinite Warfare or whatever.
Infinite it was Warfare.
The one space.
That's the one with Kevin Spacey in space. Yeah, that's correct.
Oh. Yeah. Kevin Spacey.
I mean, to be fair, that's perfect casting there.
Well, yeah, they nailed it. It's a little on the nose, but they nailed it. it's just like, you know, interest just drops off a cliff, right? So if they really don't have anything new to do with Call of Duty at this point, you know, I can't see a reason why any person would be like hyper excited about it.
It's like, oh yeah, I get to grind prestige again. Hooray. Yeah,
I mean, there are people that really do care about this modern take on the modern warfare, like the not really remakes, but kind of. sort of reimaginings of the Modern Warfare series. I am not one that does. I played the first two Modern Warfare's when they first released. But I don't know if I'm just jaded on the franchise, or I'm jaded on shooters in general, but I'm not really that excited, but maybe this one will turn it around and I'll be super excited when it launches.
It's possible. Well, yeah.
At the very least, I think, especially now with like a lot of these more like powerful modern consoles, that maybe, you know, seeing what like a new like next gen Modern Warfare can really do is a semi exciting prospect, but that's really like the extent of it for me.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
It's also like, yeah, they just announced it and it's out in 3 months and we don't know nothing about it yet. So it's really hard to gauge anything on that front.
Yeah.
So.
Get hyped. I suspect
there will be some guns in it, but other than that.
Yeah. Guns and
you mean guns? Bullets. You don't say. Maybe there'll be some shooting. Maybe.
Possibly some questionable cultural representation.
Maybe there'll be some maps and maybe some multiplayer deathmatch. Maybe.
Probably some microtransactions.
I could do that.
But the other there's a few more big things coming up between now and then, though. One of the next ones on the horizon is Immortals of Avium, which is
I was literally just going over my interview with the some people on the team, because that we wanted to get that for the issue, and I was just kind of giving it a once over.
Did you get a chance to actually play it, or is it just
I played a quick bit at Summer Game Fest, very quick. Dennis played it as well, and I want to say a few other people on the team have as well, but I have only played about 5 minutes of it, so I would not be one to judge it how it really plays. It felt like a shooter, but instead of guns, you had magic. But that might kind of change as the game evolves. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, because like part of like the early concept stuff for it, to me, seemed like a first person Forspoken.
That's kind of accurate.
At least in the core concept.
Yeah, it feels like, I don't think it's you're a person out of modern day. It's more of just if modern day was kind of fanciful and.
I mean more in like the way you use magic and stuff. Not so much the isekai story concept, like just that basic idea of like, oh yeah, maybe we saw like a gameplay demo for Forspoken early on, and we're like, hey, that's a cool idea.
I think it's the team is the people that one of the people that used to make worked in the original Dead Space, so it's in good hands in theory. I'm not sure how the final product will be, because I know vertical slices can be very deceptive. Like it could be a lot of walking around doing nothing for the game, but I don't know. Hopefully, it's good.
Yeah,
I mean it has good pedigree, so we can only see.
It's one of those things where it could be very good, very original, very interesting, or it could be a very, you know, decent, a good way, just kind of a decent, maybe unremarkable type of thing. But that's just my impression too. Yeah.
Because the initial trailer that I saw was giving me kind of like Doom-ish vibes, like just like
I didn't get Doom. Maybe like modern Hexen vibes. I could see where you have like medieval, but it's also kind of moderny, maybe. Mm-hmm. But even then, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the whole first person thing definitely kind of lends to the Doom vibes. But you're also like, yeah, Hexen is a good pull because you're using magic and stuff like that. One other thing I asked this week too was the Red Dead Redemption port.
Yes, it's
hard to call it anything else.
Yeah, it is straight up a port from what I can tell. And it only seems to be for the PlayStation because there's no backwards compatibility. It seems kind of cash grabby.
And Switch too, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm skeptical about the Switch version.
I mean, Red Dead is a game that's like late 360, but the Switch can handle 360 games pretty solidly. So in theory, it can do it. It's just, will it look good or play well? We don't know.
Yeah. Because, you know, they got Witcher 3 running on.
They did, yeah. It still looks pared down, but it does work.
Well, and Nier Automata. There's been a few other games that where they've put the effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, even stuff like No Man's Sky, which I've heard like people say like graphically, like it's uncomparable, right, to modern consoles. But the fact that it does work,
yeah,
on the Switch is still pretty impressive.
I mean, I feel the fact that we're saying the Switch can kind of do things is a bad sign. And I feel that Nintendo needs to update their console. If we're like, yeah, maybe it'll run, I don't know. That's too much of a disparity between one console and the next. And I feel that is really going to hurt Nintendo in the long run. Like, I mean, things are kind of working, but I shouldn't be, will this game be a complete and utter garbage on this console? That is what we were like in the Wii, and that did not go well.
Well, you know, there's, you're always going to have, because I think like for Red Dead, you know, I saw something on TikTok that, you know, could have just been fake. Like people, you know, just the whole Nintendo doomed crowd that's like, hey, what if I, you know, just run a video through a bunch of filters on Premiere and make it look like it's really shitty on the Switch. It's like, I don't know how much I believe it was like actual footage of the Switch version. But like, you know, you're always going to have the people who are kind of just like, hey, it's, you know, Red Dead Redemption portable. That's cool. Yeah. I'll play it for that. And I'll accept a graphical downgrade for that.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like it's one of those things where if that's like your, you know, if that's sort of your bar, to a certain degree, the Switch is kind of showing its age.
I mean, it was already kind of just skimming what the current consoles when it launched could do. And it's been like 5 years. So yeah, it's showing its age.
Yeah. But then again, like Nintendo also, like they know sort of who their crowd is, right? And they know that like these kinds of games landing on the Switch is really just like icing on like the Mario Zelda cake.
I mean, okay. I think that's true to a point. As soon as the Switch has very much placed itself as it is the secondary console, and that makes sense. But that only works so far. Even now, Nintendo has kind of been slowing down the releases. So until Nintendo has something really major coming out, I do feel people are going to be less and less willing to invest in Switch versions of things and less willing to pick up a console that, let's face it, is looking a little dated in comparison to the PS5 and Xbox Series X or compared to a slightly modern PC.
I mean, I think Switch gets the better part of this particular deal because chances are it's going to run pretty well on Switch because it's a 360. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
That's like there's a better transfer right there versus the PS4 version, which isn't going to be.
Who the hell's buying that?
That is so weird. Anyway,
like, yeah, the hell's buying that anyway?
Well, PS4 would be the same as, wouldn't it? If you bought a PS4 version of something, it'll work on the PS5.
Yeah, but then why the hell would you waste your money on a PS4 version if you have a PS5?
Well, I don't know if there's going to be any difference between the two versions. Like,
yeah, but it's like just to play Red Dead Redemption. Who gives a shit?
My point is, if the PS4 version's cheaper, I do the PS4 version.
It's not going to be, people, though. It's going to be $50.
We're going to bet about this game, too. Like, or RDR2, at least. Like, it's still a pretty popular seller.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were announcing the earnings call that sold, like, 50 million units. So it was a solid sell.
It's one of those games that's, like, constantly going on sale. Like, every month, it drops to, like, $20. And you're like, you can't find it in stock anywhere. Yeah.
I think I personally would be more like excited about like a PS5 upgrade version.
Yeah,
of,
I mean, YouTube, I think like that's RDR2, the case for all of us. Like,
and literally, Red Dead Redemption.
I think this is the case why Xbox backwards compatibility is a major selling point. Like, Chris right now could go find a disc for Red Dead Redemption or Undead Nightmare, play it on your Xbox One, and it'll look as good as this new game, and you can probably find it at a GameStop for like $20.
Well, yeah, GameStop doesn't do 360 games anymore, but there's plenty of stores that do.
Yeah, you can find it pretty cheap. Yeah. Or
yeah,
you could probably go online and find it somewhere there. Or there's lots of options.
Yeah, it's It's definitely a nice bone for the Switch
people, probably more than anything, at least. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
also kind of a weird thing, considering that they just turned off the online for RDR2 players and people were pissed about that. So
that was so,
this is a weird consolation prize.
I really have a lot of things to say about Take-Two isn't a company. They have some massive, massive franchises, but the CEO seems like he's completely out of touch with humans. He's like, people don't want backwards compatibility. Then why are you releasing it? Oh, you know, just because we have to do. Like, there's a real
make money, and it was an easy thing to do.
You could just say you just want to sell them the same thing twice. Just admit it.
Didn't he kind of say that though? He said he should be like monetizing 100% of the audience.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, but he just physically can't. So you know. There's no point releasing a game digitally that you can buy on 360 for about half the price they want to sell it for. And if they did that, the PS4 version or PS5 version would make no sense monetarily. So that doesn't work.
Well, it absolutely has to be $50 because, you know, reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The reasons are, and they're making the motion of the rubbing cash together.
I mean, 100%. I mean, he has to, you know, pay for his youth treatments and stuff. He is someone that does believe that, you know, there's ways for money can make you live forever. So, you know.
He's got the cryo chamber.
I mean, how many Grand Theft Autos does it take to build a cryo chamber? Whatever it is, he's found it.
I was going to say, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Approximately five released one. About 20 times. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Just one and a crazy amount of shark cards.
I think it sold, what is that? That game sold over 100 million copies now. It's some bonkers number.
Yeah, it's same thing. Like if you watch sales and stuff like that, it goes on for $20 almost. And people
but that's still
constantly.
We're talking billions upon billions of dollars. The games, they've made money. They're doing absolutely fine.
People are still looking for it and snapping it up whenever they can. So
yeah, exactly.
But one big week in August, because the same week as Immortals of Avian comes out, we also get Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon.
Now, I played that.
Oh, God.
To the two of
did
you.
I get to talk about that on podcast yet or no? I forget.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I
played that. Also,
how was it?
Grimes was randomly around the aircraft hangar I was in, driving a mech as I was playing it.
In the game or in real life?
In real life, Grimes was about 10 feet away from me doing something for some video and then getting into a mech. Yes, cool. The singer Grimes. Elon Musk is Elon Musk is
like a real mech.
Elon Musk's. Like, I wouldn't say like a exoskeleton thing that moves very slowly, but it's kind of cool because.
Oh, that weird thing they were demoing recently.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing. But they did that.
Neat.
Speaking of the money. Yeah.
I had a few people come up to me like, that's Grimes. And I'm going.
Okay.
I don't know you.
Why? And they're like, I'm like, all right. No one had an idea why she was there. No one knew.
Just, again, fully whiffing that money around, I guess. But
the world is a weird place.
But anyways, like, have you guys played the previous Armored Core games before? Because I'm totally foreign to the series, though.
Five, and I played four, I want to say.
I believe, okay, what was the, because there was a couple on the PS2. I know I played one.
I think the first one was PS1, if I remember correctly. Then there's a few on PS2. Then there's only one on PS3, right?
I
think it was technically two on PS3 because it was technically different missions. So it was Verdict Day and Five Direct, something like that.
Yeah, I've definitely I definitely played four. I definitely played five.
Which five?
The vanilla.
Okay, not Verdict Day.
No.
Okay.
And I wish I could remember. Oh, Silent Lion. That was the one I played.
I don't think I played that one.
Yeah. I fucking love that one. Yeah, we played the hell out of that one on PS2. Okay. And I remember it was a ridiculous mission because you were in like a burning building and your heat was like, you were like overheating.
Oh,
like,
the overheating thing, right? Oh my dear.
Oh, God, it was such a friggin' hard mission.
I mean, to be fair, the Armored Core series has always just been just a challenge. Like, it's not been you feel powerful, but you also, you could just explode in any second.
So like,
oh yeah.
On that note, how do you compare it to like the other FromSoft giants?
It feels like it doesn't have the same feel as like an Elden Ring. It feels very
it's not even close.
Mission based. It is very, you are a mech and you are powerful and you shoot things. It does not feel like, oh, I'm overcoming like the odds and becoming a hero. It is not that game. It is a much different moral like compass than Elden Ring. Elden Ring is very much like, you just kind of do what you want, and you're kind of a hero, maybe, depends on what way you go. This is very much, you are a mercenary in a weird conflict war, and you're profiteering off it. And that's kind of okay in this universe.
Yeah, because that's just the world at this point.
Yeah.
But
you're not the good guy, but no one really is, I guess.
But I would argue that maybe that's like thematically in line with like the soul stuff, but like,
yeah, okay.
You know, I think like nowadays it's kind of like gauche to compare like all FromSoft games to Dark Souls, because that's the one that took off.
That's going to be the thing though, right? Because lots of people hadn't heard of them before. Souls,
and that's a Chris, and
Ring, right? But I mean, like, but that's going to be the frame of reference now. People are like, "Oh, this is
real." I know.
What's this like? I'm not saying
arguing with you.
Yeah,
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying it absolutely drives me crazy because, like, when I think I might have mentioned this on podcast before, but like when Armored Core 6 got announced, and like one of the first articles I saw from, like, I can't remember if it was like Polygon or IGN or where it was, but that was literally just like people just like asking, is Armored Core going to be like a mech based Elden Ring? And I'm just like you guys realize that FromSoft has not only made other games in the past, but like is capable of making games that aren't Dark Souls. Like, it's
Jordan, let's go with, I'm going to teach you about something. It's called SEO, and they're literally just writing, hey, people are going to search, is Armored Core Elden Ring, and they just wanted to make sure they beat everyone to it. That's all I don't think anyone thinks it's mech-based Elden Ring.
I think people do.
That's what makes me angry. The average journalist does not.
And that's what makes me so angry, because it's like, okay, like SEO shouldn't be like an excuse for stupidity.
I mean, like, you're not, again, you're not wrong, but also
it's not an excuse for it, but it is a weaponization of stupidity.
Yeah. Like, so what is the stupidest thing someone will search? Oh, 2 million people are searching that. We're making an article on this stupid topic.
Maybe not the stupidest thing, but like the lowest common denominator thought.
Yeah. Listen, are there knights and dragons in Armored Core? No.
It's how the sausage article, gets I'm made, sure. But goddamn, if it wasn't how the sausages should get made. I will say maybe like to a certain point, because like FromSoft has always been kind of good with like making games that were sort of like functionally difficult, because kind of like in the same way that like the Souls games require you to be very like on the ball with how you build your character, I kind of feel like Armored Core has always been very good with needing to like giving you a lot of range to make a mech that like, you know, maybe isn't the most badass looking thing.
I mean, but, I made mine
functions really well.
If you look at the videos that are on our YouTube, you can see my bright pink mech with gray trim that just has a giant bazooka. Or did I? Yeah, and then three missile launchers or two missile launchers. I had two different missile launchers in my back. One was heat seeking. One was like shoots the up, then comes like down and like vertical. Yeah. That was fun. And then I also gave myself like a good cannon, and it's great. Love it.
I know. But I'm down for some very customization. Slow. That sounds pretty awesome, actually.
It is really cool. You can like.
It's a really good game.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like it genuinely. I spent. We were at a demo event, and I spent about an hour of my time, 5 hours time, just making my mech look weird because I could.
Yeah, that was like the series comes from like a time where like mechs were the big thing. Yeah,
I mean, like, mechs are always the big thing.
Well, yeah, but there was a particular renaissance there where you had like
Evangelion, the Gundam games,
based off of Evangelion. Then you had
Robotech. Like,
you had this. You had
Macross.
You know, we have Macross, Zone of the Enders,
Zoe,
even Front Mission.
Front Mission. Yeah, Front Mission. That went to places. That went places.
It's fun to see this kind of come back. Although I'd love to see FromSoft. Speaking of all the previous FromSoft games, I'd love to see them return to Adventures of Cookie and Cream.
I mean, I'd like to see them return to Kingsfield, but they're not going to.
I always forget that game, Cookies and Cream, was made by FromSoft, the same people that did Dark Souls.
Yeah, they do. They go places, and they're all weird, and I love it. But talking to the team there, I was talking to one of the producers on the game, and just hearing how like it very much is a studio that they want to take. So if you're on a team that's doing Elden Ring, that group will then kind of help the next team over. So they do have core teams that work on different games, but then they'll move around and try to like bring their different ideas to the different projects. So it does seem a very mobile studio. To be fair, the director on this game used to be a mechanic before he joined From Software. So that's cool.
So the fine tuning's really going to be in there.
Oh yeah. To be fair, someone asked them, he's like, no, it does not help me.
What else is coming up? One of the biggest games for PlayStation 5 is already out on PC as of last week, and that's Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, that one.
Get your hands on this one yet?
That one sounds like everyone's excited, and I don't think people are taking away the thing that makes that game so good. I don't think it's the combat. I think it's the amount of choice and different things you can do as a character. But I think everyone's like, oh. But all games should now be turn-based because look how well this game did. But that's not really the lesson to take away here. It's the fact that people want to just make a character that can do literally anything.
Yeah.
And this game lets that happen.
I still love turn-based combat, but you're really losing the forest or the trees with that. If that's the lesson you're getting from that.
And I've seen so many hot takes on like different like game sites that like, this is the resurgence of turn-based combat. I'm like, That's not the lesson to take away here. Yeah, it is pretty okay turn-based combat from what I've seen, but it's more the fact that people want RPGs that don't hold your hand and do let you do whatever you want, even romancing a bear if that's what you choose.
They went there.
I mean, to be fair, I've seen so many articles about how, yeah, maybe this game's just a little too just out there for some things. Like, the amount of like, you can just take all your clothing off. I haven't seen the features I've seen that people are kind of pointing out in this game. I haven't seen since Elder Scrolls 2 Daggerfall. Yeah, where you just take all your clothing off and it's just like there. Okay. Yeah. That's just me naked. Okay. Not wearing a loincloth. Yeah. Cool. Why not?
A lot of like streamers read into the nudity and stuff in the game. Like Cyberpunk did that 2 years ago though.
I mean, and it had jiggle physics and like wobble physics. So.
Well, that is true. It's the next gen.
Oh, so weird. That's such a weird series.
Yeah.
So weird. But, okay, so just looking at Cyberpunk, the promise of what Cyberpunk looked like it could be is kind of what Baldur's Gate is. The fact that you can do anything. Cyberpunk, when it first was shown, made it seem like you could go any direction you want. You can be any kind of person you want. And then the real game was like, it's just kind of an action game that has some RPG elements. Cool.
You got like eight things.
Wasn't Baldur's Gate also like kind of like a spin-off-y thing from Dungeons & Dragons? Like a certain Dungeons & Dragons?
It is. Like it's straight up like D&D.
It is.
Oh, straight up. It just says, okay, yeah.
In the D&D movie, they mention Baldur's Gate.
Like it's, okay. it's a setting in the Forgotten Realms. Like,
yeah. Okay. Because I remember hearing, and I think that's a big part of why it is the way it is. And I know a lot of people have told me, even like the Baldur's Gate games, like the PC ones, like are some of the best, you know, sort of top down RPGs.
I mean, that was where BioWare got started. Like that was Black Isle Studios at the time. That was where those teams kind of came into their own, and why Dragon Age made sense. It was kind of the serial successor to Baldur's Gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of what like why it is the way it is, and why no other game can be like it. Because
no, I disagree with that. I disagree with that 100%. Just because it's D&D doesn't mean that another game couldn't do something interesting. Like look at what was the game? The game made by the people that did Fallout New Vegas that Microsoft purchased.
Oh my god, it's literally like on the tip of my tongue. It's gonna drive me crazy. Outer World.
Yes, that game was what Fallout could have been if you could do whatever you wanted, and made like by a team that let that happen and didn't take forever to come out. So there's ways to make these games work. The franchise doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
No. What I meant to say is because it's coming from that place, like its roots as a D&D product.
Okay.
Like it knows, and it has that sort of mentality to like let the player do as much as they want, or like within the confines of the game, because obviously no game is ever going to like reach what you know is capable.
But if you're actually
playing,
I'm just going to counter that for 1 second, because some of the biggest RPGs come from RPG systems. Pathfinder, Cyberpunk is an RPG system as well. I'm sure there's more.
Cyberpunk is a little bit more restrictive, and like
the actual board, the actual tabletop is very, you can do a lot of things.
No, sure.
Yes, it has its tabletop rules, but what I'm
saying is like in the realms of like of a video game, right? So you see a lot of games, even Fallout kind of fell in that trap too, right? Like where it's sort of like reducing its like choices and like what you can and can't do, because you know it's just like whether it was the purposes of tightening up gameplay or just making it appeal to a broader audience, you know, there's it had to sort of like make some concessions along the way. Whereas like a game like Baldur's Gate isn't going to do that just because it has its origins in Dungeons and Dragons. So it knows like what players want is to have as much choice as possible. So like, it's one of those things where it's a bit of a delicate line to walk, and not a lot of games, for whatever reason, like will walk that line, because like, you know, I guess, and maybe, you know, for design reasons or whatever, you know, it's hard to just like, I guess, to calculate for all these different things that a player might want to do. So I don't know. It just feels to me like Baldur's Gate specifically is like, was always going to be like that, and it's just difficult for other games to try and do that.
I mean, I feel it's giving a franchise or a property too much credit. It's the team that let that happen. There's a lot of D&D stuff that has no freedom of choice at all, and then there's ones that do. And it's a fact that this team, when they're working on Divinity, and that's those games also have a lot of choice, and it's a team that genuinely likes this sort of franchise and game, and it's like they took the time to do that. Not every studio will put the time into the weirdest minutia. Also, not all games need to do that. I don't think there is some feature. I think there is some feature creep in Baldur's Gate 3. The amount of weird things, like why'd they spend hours doing that? Cool, I guess. But it took like 5 years for a game that is not the most graphically
highest graphic.
Yeah, not fellatioed. Not that one at all.
Well, no. Maybe.
Fallacious? Fallacious?
It's a very
high game. Fidelity games in the world. Yes. But they spent a lot of time doing all the weird stuff they wanted to do, and they had a studio that let that happen. Do I think that's what all studios should do? No, definitely not. I don't want an Assassin's Creed where a team spent 6 months making a weird fishing minigame that no one knows exists. That's a bad use of time.
Yeah, it's like not to mention.
Yeah, but when you find that minigame.
Yeah.
Like Baldur's Gate has all this crazy like options you can do, but it also took, 2 to 3 years in early access? To get it to that point where everything was stable and tested enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think with enough time and like enough patience and resource, mm-hmm. like you can achieve that. Because again, thinking about that, when I think back to Fallout New Vegas, right? Like
right.
The team there were under a considerable amount of crunch. Like a year, right? They did that. I don't even think it was a year. I think it was honestly like 6 months.
That's
like they were given things, yeah. Bethesda gave them no time to do that game. Yeah. And the fact that that game still has like as much like freedom of choice that you get with every every quest, like the way you can go through like every mm-hmm. quest and like approach it in any sort of direction, like yeah. is a testament to, you know, the team's like commitment to their game design and like mm-hmm. what they were able to sort of like do in that amount of time, right? There that, you know, the game, sure, the game was a buggy mess, but it is probably one of the more
definitely a buggy mess. 100%.
Oh yeah, no,
it 1000% a giant rough mess. Yeah,
it's rough, but it's still like I would sooner go back and play, you know, the Xbox version or the 360 version of New Vegas than even like Fallout 3. Like it's mm-hmm. way more fleshed out than 3.
But yeah. That's a Bethesda thing for you, even if it wasn't them directly working on that game. That's what that series is known for, in part because of them. But
and I guess, you know, it's to a certain degree you're right, Brendan. Obviously, you don't want that in every game, but I think like for certain RPGs,
okay,
you do kind of want that, because even like, okay, like, you know, taking it back to, you know, to Dark Souls, right? Like
okay.
Dark Souls. You know, it might not have like the kind like that kind of like robust level of choice or like freedom in its story, but it does give you a lot of like versatility in how you make your character, which allows you to sort of like approach the game in a lot of different ways, right? Like when it comes to like the role playing aspect of the role playing game, like you want to be able to make those, like to have freedom to make decisions, right? Because if you're sort of trying to play a character and it's like, you know, not giving you options to do that, you know what, because this is something I was actually thinking about recently when I was replaying KOTOR 2.
Okay, yeah.
And I wanted to play a character who, like, because typically I always lean towards making like going to the dark side. But like, yeah. I wanted to try and make a character who was like dark side neutral, because there were a lot of really good like extended universe Star Wars yeah. books that talked about like Sith lords who were like neither like really like on the like wholly evil dark side characters, that they were kind of like neutral or whatever. Like, but yeah. the way that game is kind of designed is like, if you really want to go dark side, you have to just be like the biggest piece of shit in the world, and like you have to just be a prick to everybody. And I was like, why can't I be like a pragmatic Sith
just kind
Lord?
Of use like Force Lightning, but also be like, I'm not going to kill you because I just don't. Yeah,
not every situation needs me to like force choke a guy. Like, you know, you could be like reasonable, but it's like, no, if you really wanted to, like, every time you did something that was like generally reasonable, but not like all the way good, you got like light side points. And I was like, what the fuck? You're not letting me play my character the way I want to play him.
it's too hard to be that discreet or that discerning with the application of the dark side, but I mean, maybe the Baldur's Gate 3 could break down some of those barriers and, you know, show somebody a path to do something like that. Because, yeah, it's always like, yeah, you're dark side, so you're going to do the most bombastic display of that possible.
You're just going to be the most evil.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't want to be insidious.
You just kind of want to be a little bit nice, and, not nice, you know.
Well, yeah. Not even all the way nice, just like reasonable. even like, you know, you could be chaotic neutral or even like evil neutral. Like,
so I do want to say, I do like the fact that Baldur's Gate 3 is doing well. I like the fact that that team is getting rewarded for the amount of effort they put into it. I'm sad that you were mentioning KOTOR. We're probably not going to see the KOTOR 3 that we were promised.
No.
It's
I feel that's not happening.
Yeah. Are we even going to see the KOTOR 1 remake at this point?
I feel that has also been kind of canceled.
Well, that was the one, right?
No, I think they're going to make a 3 as well.
Because the Spire was remaking the first one.
I thought they talked about 3.
Maybe. I honestly don't remember at this point.
The point is, whatever Spire is working on is not sounding like it's in great shape.
No. Also, the fact that it's so weird that studio is the one doing it rather than... Like, it's BioWare. Why is BioWare not doing it?
Even that, maybe, like, because it's Obsidian's still kicking around.
But I know Obsidian's owned by Microsoft now.
Yeah, but you could still subcontract them.
I mean, maybe. Who knows at this point? At this point, who knows? Like, I don't – like, Microsoft owns a lot of things. I'm like, why do they own that? They're just making games and plays. Like, none of these studios owned by anything make any sense. Like, I was at the Jays game the other day, and Microsoft consoles were playing MLB The Show. And I'm like, that's so weird.
That's just
– like, this is the showcase of Microsoft is showcasing a Sony game.
Yeah, and calling it a win.
So makes sense. Like, everything is like, I know that sometimes you have to separate those two concepts out, but it's super weird. Like, Microsoft does not have a firm grasp on what games to make. It just makes random stuff, and some of it's real dumb. And but they don't have a sports game. They have like no sports titles.
None of it is the things they should be making.
Or it's the way so they weird.
Speaking of Xbox games,
yeah,
go for it. The same day as Baldur's Gate 3 hits PS5, Xbox gets Starfield.
I mean, cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going over this one yet. It looks better than I thought it was, but I still just see No Man's Sky and Mass Effect having a baby, basically. Like, it's...
I want to think it's going to be good. I've not been... I don't really care about space travel as much as other people do, and I don't really care about the concept that, oh, we're going to be like spanning across the stars. Star Trek, I enjoy that. That's fun. The weird retro 50s, like, what if we just kept exploring space and never advanced the technology beyond the fact that it looked kind of like the 50s again? That doesn't really spark anything with me. It's cool in concept. No. I've never been... The golden age of space travel has never been a thing that it really inspired me.
No.
But I also just, I don't care enough about the vastness of the world. So like, this game is the biggest game ever. I'm like, I don't want to explore that. I know we've said this in past podcasts where I don't really love the idea of a game that is so big I will never be able to experience it all. That to me doesn't seem fun.
You know what? Yeah. Maybe I'm on the other side of this to a degree because, you know, I liked No Man's Sky from the beginning.
I liked it too, but it was procedurally generated. You didn't have a list of here's every star system. You've seen 5% and you're never going to see the rest of it because you don't have thousands of hours.
And Starfield feels a little bit to me like what No Man's Sky should have done.
Like, no, I feel like just, what Starfield is what No Man's Sky, people thought No Man's Sky was. Well,
like, you know what? You're not wrong.
You're definitely not
wrong.
I don't think they ever said it's going to be this, but everyone kept saying, yeah, based on what he said, it has to be these things. And he's never really technically said that. He just said, we don't know. And they're like, yeah, that's a yes. It's definitely going to be the biggest game ever. And it's going to be super multiplayer. It's going to be great. And then it was not. And everyone's like, oh, okay.
But like, going back and playing No Man's Sky, like recently,
it's gotten a lot better.
It is so much better. Like, it actually feels like a complete game, but the one thing that it's still kind of missing
is
a story, and I think, and some like memorable places. Like, you never go to a planet that feels like it's like inhabited by people.
It's always what I viewed No Man's Sky was is a space Minecraft with a few random elements that it just kind
it is.
Spattered around random worlds. They're like, hey, that's kind of a temple, I guess. And you're like, yeah, cool. This might be some kind of story if they put time and money into it, but it's not. So yay.
No, like it's definitely still like the kind of game where it's just like, if you just kind of go into it and it's just like, just don't think about it too hard.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably going to see some reasonably cool stuff because they added so much more to it now. And it's like, it feels like a fully complete game where it's like, you can just like go around and just be a trader. Like, you really don't have to go onto planets all that much. Like, it's not hyper necessary. Like, you can, you know, if you want to explore, there's actually a little bit more stuff going on. They have these like weird anomaly planets with giant, like, worms busting out of the worlds and stuff.
I was
like,
literally just thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's super cool now. But like when I look at Starfield and it's like, didn't they say Starfield's going to have some degree of like procedural generation? Like, it's not,
I think they said there's, certain worlds that use procedurally generated content. And then there's other worlds that are handcrafted. Yeah. Most cities are going to be handcrafted. So if there's a city on a world that's handcrafted, someone like went there and made all the different little buildings. If it's a random desert planet, it's kind of the No Man's Sky approach, but there's elements it's a library of elements they bring in. So they didn't make 1,000 worlds. They made like 50 worlds and then duplicated it out.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like is the one thing that No Man's Sky really is missing. It's just like, because they added some small things, like, you know, there's like a pirate's den now you can go to, but it just kind of feels like any old space station. But like, if you could actually go to like planets or like cities that actually were, like you said, like handcrafted and like felt like genuine and realized,
but I'm gonna feel like a
much more complete game.
Yeah, but I'm gonna throw it out there, Jordan. Bethesda or Bethesda Softworks, Bethesda Game Studios. Yeah, that's right. Softworks is the publisher. Yeah, it's weird. They are a team of hundreds. The team at Hello Games is like 20.
Yeah,
and that's probably including the PR people. So
this isn't me trying to take a stab at Hello Games. Like, you know,
I mean, clearly, you hate Hello Games and you hate everyone there and you're just starting beef.
I've supported them since day one. Like, but that's, it's just, it really is
Rick
like
Danger. Is that right?
I didn't play Rick Danger. I think I was aware of it, but I didn't play it.
Okay.
I still need to play The Last Campfire. I heard it was good.
You're not day one then. You're not a true Hello Gamesy over here.
I've supported No Man's Sky since day one. Even that's not totally true, because I remember Brendan Quinn was really excited about it and he was like really hyped for it. And I remember even then I was kind of being like, I don't know if this game is possible to do all the things. Podcast
where you call you out for things you said about No Man's Sky, and I'm sure it's still in there.
Maybe. But so, I was never mean. I just said I didn't think video games in general were capable of what No Man's Sky wanted to do. Like, just
no. It just, again, I'm gonna throw it out there. I'm gonna throw it out there. It's what people wanted No Man's Sky to do.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's 100% what it was.
I don't think Hello Games ever said it's gonna be the game to end all games. People just said, wow, procedurally generated game that keep making planets, it's the game to end all games. They never said that. They didn't make a claim that this is the last game you'll ever buy. People just assumed, hey, if it can make infinite numbers of worlds, I never need to buy another game. That's not reality. That's just people randomly spitballing into the ether, and then that's what they assumed the game was. And when it wasn't that, people got angry.
I think that's not fair. Well, I think the fairest thing we can say is that the audience like hyped it up beyond like what was realistic, but Hello Games and Sean Murray definitely didn't downplay any of it. Like they weren't like saying like, no, you guys can't do this. They were kind of just like, maybe you can do this.
It wasn't quite the Peter Molyneux effect where it was, he just randomly say things that he thought should exist. He was like, oh, I guess we're making a completely different game now. Whoops. He just wasn't good at PR. He didn't know how to say no. He wanted to be like, you'll wait and see because he didn't want to spoil things. But that doesn't work when people are spitballing the stupidest ideas. And he's like, maybe one day.
It was a bad combo all around.
I feel that he needed someone that was not him to do the PR spin. But because he was kind of manning it all and he ran the Twitter account, everything he said, people took as gospel when he was really just trying to – he just wasn't very well media trained. And that's fine.
Yeah.
If I was randomly to appear with cameras and just people asked me random questions about the magazine, if they had pie-in-the-sky ideas, I might be like, yeah, maybe one day. I'd be like, yeah, next issue of the magazine is going to include the 3D VR.
In fairness, though, he did straight up just lie about multiplayer when the game was launched.
Yeah,
he did. He did straight up just lie about it.
He's like, you just will never run into each other. And they're like, no, we're on the same planet.
Good save.
Yeah, okay, it doesn't exist, sorry.
Yeah, good save there, Sean. it got a lot. They made up for it, it's true.
Oh, yeah, the amount of free updates they put out for that game, years. Oh, yeah.
And they're still doing it.
I mean,
they're still updating it.
I mean, that game's made them a lot of money, but also they're putting a lot of development resources into constantly updating it. So yes, bad launch. Yes, it could never live up to the hype that people built around it. But also, that team delivered, and that's amazing. But it was never going to be what everyone wanted it to be. And I think I worry Starfield will have the same problem. It's going to be a bigger game. It's going to have more people on the staff. So people aren't going to forgive the issues that they might arise. And I really worry that
it's
hyping it up way too much.
And I wonder at this point, because you still do kind of see it, even like Chris kind of like made the joke about it, that like people, I wonder if people are still as forgiving of Bethesda now for like games being like glitchy,
I don't think they are.
Messes.
I feel
because that was always the thing. People were always like,
people forgave Bethesda. People forgave it because it was like the underdog, and that's the one game, that's the big games they release, and they're just so big. How can you not do that? But now they have Microsoft money behind them. Now that they had videos about how big the team is they're doing on it, and it's going to be perfect. So if there's anything wrong, also, I'm going to throw it out there. Xbox fanboys can be toxic. Not everyone, but it is a group that has a me versus them mentality at times. And I worry that could look bad if things aren't exactly the way they want them to be, or people will be disappointed and they'll defend whatever happens.
I could see it going drastically towards defending something that's not defendable. Like if it does turn out to be
the game, like barely functions, and then they're like, nope, it's the perfect game. You're just wrong.
It's the best game ever made. Yeah, it's the best because the toxicity has been pretty rampant. If you dare to go on Twitter, I'm not calling it X. I'm not calling it that. It's Twitter. if you go on any kind of online conversation about Xbox stuff, the toxicity has just ramped up in recent months. They're taking the whole Microsoft acquisition thing as a big win, and
been trying
to say 16 to the mud because it's exclusive.
I don't understand the tribalism among consoles. Who cares? Play the game on whatever console you want. It's fine. Yeah. Also, Sony has exclusives too. That's also fine. I don't really care. Like, there's the same – in one breath, people will be like, how dare they keep Spider-Man for themselves? And the next breath be like, Starfield needs to be exclusive. That's what Xbox needs. Both things can't be true. Same thing for Sony people. Sony people do the same thing. They'll be decrying the fact that how dare Starfield not come to PlayStation, but also be really excited that that Sony has Spider-Man or God of War and Xbox doesn't. Both things are bad.
I'm not seeing a whole lot of crying about Starfield being exclusive. Like, that doesn't seem to be irking people the same way that other things irk Xbox people.
It was for a bit until like Summer Game, like the showcase. Then people were like, yeah, okay, I guess it's exclusive now.
This is what it is. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if the hype is kind of dying down around it. And I'm not sure. Like, before it was really shown off a lot, there was a lot of, like, there was petitions saying how dare it's exclusive. Since it was shown off, people were just like, okay, I guess that's exclusive, fine.
Now, just a theory that came to me just now as we're talking about it, do you think that's there's less hype about it because it's just going to be dumped on Game Pass day one?
Yeah.
Versus this is a game that I'm looking forward to buying and purchasing and adding to my library. I'm going to go with the midnight launch for it and all this stuff. You don't have that.
I feel Game Pass is a blessing and a curse. It builds hype. It makes it so everyone can try a game. You can say, oh, if it's on Game Pass, I'm going to get to do that. But people don't get as excited if they're not part of an experience, the launch experience, playing Fallout 4 when it first launches, playing the newest Warcraft expansion as it first launches and just being part of that zeitgeist. But when you're just kind of getting in a Game Pass and there's just going to be like tons of people just there, it doesn't have the same feel. You're not feeling like you're being buying into a thing. I don't know if that's good or bad, because I don't think paying $100 just to be part of a week of two of fun is worth, you know, shunning everyone that doesn't do that out. But I do feel that games that are launched day one on Game Pass don't have the same hype level as games that are launched on, like, you buy them and then, you know, you experience it that way. Like Baldur's Gate, if it was just free, I don't think it would have had the same like uptake that everyone was jumping onto it to play it as Starfield has.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that I could be wrong. It could be like a massive community that is just wearing their spacesuit and just waiting for it to come out. I say that. I mean, I think it's the Starfield jacket's the one they're selling. But I don't know if it's as big an audience as it could be. Also, the fact that it's exclusive and Xbox is trailing quite heavily behind PS5. What is it? It's and it's only going to be Series X, Series S, and PC.
PC.
It's not going to be Xbox One at all. Mm-hmm. So that I think it's, what is it? Xbox Series, like the Xbox Series like range has just over like under 30 million, and PS5's like well past 40 million right now, right?
I'm not even sure Xbox Series is that high, to be honest. But they don't release their numbers.
So it's almost double. From like PS5 is that much ahead that it means that you're losing that massive audience. And I don't, like, yes, there's PC players, but PC players have never been, yes, Baldur's Gate selling well in PC, but it doesn't need, the specs aren't killer. You could play it on a mid-range PC, you'll be fine. Starfield, you're gonna need a hefty PC, and it's gonna need a lot of the top end stuff. And that's just – the average person just does not have that at the ready. Mm-hmm. And then there's just less people playing Xbox than there are PlayStation. So I don't know if that's hurting the game in the end.
I'm just so skeptical to even get my hopes up that much for it, because I just know how Bethesda games are at launch.
Yeah. Also, you have the fact that, okay, you have PlayStation and PC. You're like, okay, do I need a Series X now? And you're like, I'll get it on Game Pass, figure out if I need that X to play it. And then you play, you're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I got it for free.
I'm not sure it's enough to sell Series X's.
Yeah, and I don't...
That's the one thing.
I really do... I don't understand the Microsoft idea behind it. Like, yeah, you want to have those killer titles, but I don't know if this is going to be the killer title that moves Xboxes.
Yeah, well, time will tell, and not too far off now. It's only just under a month. So
yeah, it's very soon. I mean, that being said, I hope it does well. That studio seems like they put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. So I hope that game lives up to all the hype. I want every game to succeed. Let's be clear here. I just don't know if the economic conditions around the game will let it succeed to the extent it could. Let's go with that, because I don't want to make it seem like I'm hating on Starfield. I think it looks really cool. Maybe not my setting, but they've done a really good job making the thing they made.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my expectations are low because of technical issues, and I'm not going to rush out to buy a Series X for it, but I hope it proves it to be a cool concept, because
I agree.
There's a lot of neat parts there.
It looks really good.
There's a couple other quick ones we'll get to just to kind of round up the year before we call it a night. Cool. Personally, my biggest one for the year, one thing that I am super excited for, is Spider-Man 2.
Yeah,
on the PlayStation that one looks 5, about October 20th.
So Insomniac used to be a third party studio, and I was looking over old interviews we've done in the past, and looking at the interview we did with what is it called? The one with the weird beverage that was made by Insomniac for the Xbox One launch.
Sunset Overdrive.
That's it.
Oh.
That's it.
Yeah, that's another one that was like really cool in concept, but like nobody rushed out to buy an Xbox One just for that game.
No, my point was the fact that that game was Insomniac kind of launching like the first game they did for Xbox, and everyone was excited. It definitely did not build the hype that everyone was hoping would. And now that's an internal studio at Sony. It's just so weird how like studios.
Funny how things turn out.
Also, like Bungie is still like announcing stuff this week. And it's hard to remember that used to be owned by Microsoft as well.
It used to be Halo.
Halo.
But now they're just.
So it's so strange seeing these studios switch hands and be like, okay, I guess that's just PlayStation now. Sure, whatever.
Yeah, that's. Well, it's even strange too for me because like the Spider-Man, or one of the things that grabbed me the most about the 2017 Spider-Man was like how much it reminded me of the one that Neversoft did on the PS1. Because back then they just kind of nailed that experience of like the Spider-Man physics and everything like that, just really nailed it. And I thought it was so amazing at the time. And then 2017, since Insomniac Spider-Man came out, and I was like, this is, I feel like I'm back like 20-ish years ago. Like,
yeah.
And just like, it's wild to me that these games aren't made by Neversoft. It still kind of blows my mind.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
But yeah, I've been replaying Spider-Man Remastered, and I'm now working on Miles Morales for the first time, and I'm just constantly blown away by, again, how much they nail that experience. The story is just so perfect.
Insomniac, I never really played the Ratchet and Clank series, but I did love what they did with Resistance when the PS3 launched. And just seeing how that studio is just, it just delivers over and over again, even though it's hard to imagine the studio not working on PlayStation, even though they have done other things with PlayStation. They've done, like, as I said, Sunset Overdrive, but they are so good at releasing games on PlayStation. They are good at using whatever hardware they're given and doing the best they can with it.
Well, yeah, they cut their teeth with Spyro the Dragon.
Like, yeah.
The original trilogy was them.
That's my point. Like,
yeah.
It was kind of a second party studio. It was like wholly owned by themselves, but they really didn't know how to produce really solid games. And now just how far that studio has come now under Sony, they are just really killing it. And I wonder what they could have done if they stayed like independent and actually released games on both Xbox and PlayStation, or it is the fact that they can focus on one console that lets them really kind of show what they can do with that console.
Yeah. And you know what? I imagine that there probably is some truth to that, because you definitely saw it the most, I think, during the like 360, PS3, Wii era of games, where like you'd have games come out, you know, simultaneously on Xbox and PlayStation, and then the Wii version, which had to be like radically different because
it's completely different experience. This is completely different.
Like, yeah. And you know, because like the operating system was totally different. The design kit was totally different. How the system worked was totally different. So it's like
so true.
when you have systems that like, or you have developers who have to try and like internally make a game that runs one way on two consoles and then something completely different on another console. It's either like, you know, you have a dedicated team for the Wii version that's working on something completely different, or, you know, you have to sort of like split resources and you're never going to get a product that's as like similar quality to what you're getting on the other stuff, right? So it's like if you have one singular, but then you know you look at the studios that made games solely for the Wii and like mm-hmm. only focused on it, like I mean, you don't with the exception
we're not counting shovelware
no absolutely not, like with the exception of Nintendo specifically, like some really good games on the Wii because you know they were designed specifically with the system in mind, right?
Yep, I agree.
And 100%. Some of that's at play here too with Spider-Man 2. It's like, especially mm-hmm. like, I imagine they're getting kind of similar coaching from Sony that Square Enix had for 16. And that, you know, Sony came in to kind of help them do certain technical things.
I
think it's certainly happening with Insomniac, with their close relationship.
I mean, Insomniac, Sony. They work really closely with the rest of Sony. So I think if they're having any trouble with any aspect, I'm sure they could just get on the phone and figure out, hey, we want to do this weird thing. How do we do this weird thing? And I know I have griped on the amount of studios that Microsoft has that doesn't seem to do much with it. Sony also has a stupid amount of studios that I don't really know what they're all working on, but they have them.
And they do put stuff out. They're just
Every once in a while, they'll just be like Sony released a weird game. Like they have numerous studios in Europe and like England especially. And I don't know what half of them make. Some of them VR stuff, some of them who knows, but they own them.
And in 6 months, they'll drop something and you'll go, that's what it was. Was there anything else for the rest of the year that you guys were particularly excited for?
I mean, the one thing that I think like I've genuinely allowed myself to get hyped up for is probably Super Mario Wonder.
Hmm.
Which, like, I honestly don't think I've been hyped about a game since, like, or at least this hyped about a game since probably, like, Animal Crossing.
See, so, I wasn't sure which one you were going to say at the end of Super Mario, because I figured it'd either be Wonder or RPG, but I wasn't sure which one you were going to
go. I'll be honest, like, I'm super excited for RPG, like, mostly, like, partly for the fact that Super Mario RPG was like one of the like three games I played like all the time growing up. Like that, Kirby Superstar and Donkey Kong Country were like the only three games we ever played growing up. So it's like it's a pretty meaningful game for me. But it is mostly a remake of a game I've played 1,000 times. So as much as I am excited for it, I'm not as excited as I am for Wonder, which like looks so genuinely like new and refreshing for like 2D Mario, the same way that like Odyssey was so new and refreshing for 3D Mario, that like I'm like just like cannot wait to get my hands on it.
I am very curious to see more of this. Like the trailer was a really cool proof of concept. I'm very curious to see more substance on this for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It looks genuinely hilarious and fun.
There, some of the smaller stuff, because I've just been like looking over some of the like, you know, release things like for the rest of the year. I think the only one, like, you know, obviously Spider-Man 2, like I am excited to play because I really did love the PS4 Spider-Mans. But like, I think the only one really that I am like genuinely excited to play is probably Lies of P.
Hmm.
And that's just because, you know, it's Bloodborne with Pinocchio, and I can't get enough Bloodborne, so I'm really happy about that.
It's so funny, the Pinocchio thing, every time someone says that.
I'm amazed that game's not out yet, though. I thought it was coming out a lot sooner than it was, just because of the amount of talking this game's getting.
No, it's out in September 19th.
Yeah.
So it's close, but...
It is.
It's a demo out even now, I believe, right?
There is, yeah.
Demo was a lot of fun. Oh, it was so good.
Mm.
Really cool vibe. I really loved it.
Anything on your radar, Brendan?
No, I'm. I think we've talked about everything I'm kind of waiting for. So,
no one's hyped for. Let's see here. What's a strange pick? The Spurs 2, Prisoner of the Green.
The Stone? Sisters 2, Road to Fame.
Hogwarts.
The Grinch Christmas Switch. Adventures.
The thrice delayed Hogwarts Legacy on Switch.
Yeah, no kidding.
Biomutant on Switch.
Yay.
Yeah, that's what we want. don't get me started, Chris.
I know. That was a test. Just to see how quiet you can stay, since you're trying to stay quiet.
We don't need to go down that road.
But yeah, lots that of stuff for games coming up beyond those we talked about. And I'm kind of curious to see if there's any surprises here, because we still have, you know, Assassin's Creed Mirage could be interesting. So we'll see what shakes out for us for the rest of the year. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for us for tonight.
Sounds good. It's been a fun look at what's going in the fall. And catching up, because we haven't been on for a little bit. So that's our fault. So,
well, there you go. But yeah, if you'd like to read more on these games and more as preview seasons approach for each of them, you can find full coverage at cgmagonline.com. Be sure to follow CG Magazine on all the socials. Just search for CG Mag. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to podcast@cgmagonline.com. Jordan, where can folks reach you?
I mean, I'm mostly off social media at this point, but I guess sometimes on Instagram and sometimes on TikTok at NinjaXJordan. And also, you can find me playing games on YouTube at NinjaJordanReviews.
Fun.
And you can find me.
Okay,
viewfinder.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
Awesome. You can find me at bfry26 on pretty much everything.
And yeah, you can find me on, I guess, Threads. That's a whole other topic we haven't got the chance to talk about, is the whole new state of social media. But yeah, checking out Threads these days at Hoogathy, and pretty much anything else under that name.
Awesome.
But yeah, that's going to do it for us for tonight. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.